into his new seat. "Today, we are going to go on a little history scavenger hunt," I said. "I know that it's a little windy outside, but it hasn't started raining yet, so let's quickly see if we can do this. Let's all walk outside near the back of the school." After a minute or two, we were all outside. It was barely windy, and I wondered if this was the calm before the storm. As I asked for everyone's attention, I saw Liberty suddenly appear behind the students. I continued, "Of course, our class wouldn't be the same without Liberty." I reached out my hand in Liberty's direction. The class turned around and immediately smothered Liberty with praise and affection. Dozens of hands petted his sides, nose, and mane as they commented how much they missed him. Liberty just stood there like he was taking a long, hot shower. "That's Mr. Revere's horse," I heard Tommy tell Cam. "Sometimes Mr. Revere will sneak him into the classroom. It's a secret, so don't tell anyone." I looked up at the sky and said, "We probably don't have much time. I've hidden 6 different objects around the schoolyard. Each has a bright yellow ribbon tied to it. I'll give you 5 minutes to search for them and bring them back to me. Ready, set, go." "I see one," said a boy from somewhere in the back. Instantly, all 25 students took off running in different directions. The wind had picked up a little, but nothing out of the ordinary. Within minutes, the students returned. "Wonderful," I said. "All the objects have someone in common. Let's see what you found. Tommy, I believe you returned first. Show us what you have." Tommy awkwardly stepped forward while wearing a pair of black swimming fins. He waddled like a large penguin. "Can you tell the class who invented flippers?" I asked.
Aquaman," he said.
The class laughed. "Strike one," I said. "Captain Nemo," he tried again. More laughter. "Strike two," I grinned. Tommy's eyebrows went up, and his eyes went wide, as he said, "Oh, I remember now, SpongeBob SquarePants." Tommy high-fived several of the students near him, including Cam, as the rest of the class laughed. "Well, you're in fine form today, Tommy," I said with a smile. "However, 3 strikes and you're out. Who has the next object?" Freedom stepped forward as Tommy waddled back to the other students. She said, "I found this old book," and she held it up so the other students could see. She sounded a little confused and read the cover. It says, "Gulliver's Travels by Jonathan Swift." "Thank you, Freedom," I said. "The book you're holding is a classic. The person who invented the flippers also loved to read and was very smart. Most assuredly, he read Gulliver's Travels. In fact, when this book was first published in 1726, the person I'm thinking of was only 20 years old."
1726? Whoa! That's a long time ago," one boy said.
"So this mystery person was born in 1706, said Tommy. "That's like 86 years from the time the Mayflower arrived and the Pilgrims landed at Plymouth Rock."
"Correct," I said.
Several students turned to Tommy and looked surprised by his quick calculation.
"What?" Tommy asked innocently. "It was a lucky guess."
"What else did you find?" I asked. Cam stepped forward. Said, "I found this newspaper. The crazy thing about it is that it's the Pennsylvania Gazette, printed in 1732. Now, how did you find a newspaper this old, Mr. Revere?"
"Oh, I have a friend that has a way of getting old things," I said, winking at Liberty.
"The person I'm thinking of was also a printer. In fact, his newspaper, the Pennsylvania Gazette, was the most successful newspaper in the colonies. Does anyone want to guess the man I'm thinking of?"
Nobody raised their hand.
"Very well, there are 3 more items. Let's see them all." 3 students came forward with a piece of wood, a kite, and reading glasses. I briefly described each one. "I'm sure you're wondering what a piece of wood has to do with the history mystery man.
Well, in 1742, this man invented a new kind of stove. It was a metal-lined fireplace that stood in the middle of a room. It provided more heat and less smoke than an open fireplace, and it used less wood. Now, this stove was made from cast iron and would radiate heat from the middle of the room in all directions. This stove was a very popular way to warm your home if you lived in colonial America. In fact, it's still used today. Well, what about these crazy-looking glasses, asked the boy who was wearing them and trying to see through the upper and lower lenses. Those reading glasses are called bifocals. The man I'm thinking of created them in 1784. The upper half of the glass lens was for distance, and the lower half of the lens was for reading. My grandma has a pair of those, said Tommy. Yeah, right, said Cam sarcastically. You know you have a pair, don't lie. Cam and Tommy joked around as they playfully slugged each other in the arms. I continued, yes, they're still popular even today, I said. Did this guy also invent the kite? Asked the girl who held up the red and white diamond-shaped kite with a long blue tail. No, I said, but this person in history used the kite to experiment with electricity. Now, that's a pretty big clue of who I'm thinking of. Benjamin Franklin, said Tommy. Bingo, I said. Isn't his face on the $1 bill? Asked a red-headed girl. Actually, he's on the $100 bill, I corrected. Did you hide one of those somewhere in the schoolyard, too? Asked Tommy. I'm a teacher, not a banker, I said with a laugh. But Tommy's right about Benjamin Franklin. He is the mystery man of history that invented the swimming fins, owned a printing press, and created the Franklin stove. He loved reading so much, he established a library. And in 1753, his experiments with electricity enabled him to create a device that could protect homes and buildings from the destructive force of lightning bolts. The lightning rod, shouted Liberty. He'd been so quiet, I'd almost forgotten Liberty was with us. A very useful device, Liberty explained. A lightning rod is an iron rod attached to the top of a house or a building and connected to a wire that's attached to another rod that's in the ground. Since lightning is typically attracted to the highest point of a building, the electric charge from a lightning bolt will strike the rod, and the charge is conducted harmlessly into the ground. I remember now our large barn back home had one at either end of the roof. And that's when I noticed Cam staring at Liberty with his jaw open. Am I seeing things, or did that horse just talk? He mumbled. Tommy, who was standing beside Cam, said, oh, that's right, I should have warned you about that. He's a talking horse. Cam slugged Tommy in the arm again and laughed. Whatever. Where I come from, the horses don't talk. Nice practical joke. Cam was smiling. Tommy looked at me and shrugged like he wasn't sure what to say next. Seriously, Cam continued, that looked like he was actually talking. That's got to be the best prank ever. And just then, the sky lit up, and within a few seconds, the sound of thunder made all of us jump. Liberty stepped back and yelled, I am out of here! He bolted away from us, out of sight, as he rounded the corner of the school. Everyone, please, head inside. We don't have much time before the bell rings and class is over. So let's meet back at the classroom and finish up today's lesson. As we headed back inside, random raindrops started to fall from the sky. By the time we were back inside the classroom, the drops had turned into a heavy shower. The six Franklin objects were placed on the teacher's desk, and once everyone had settled in their seats again, I said, we only talked about some of the inventions and discoveries that came from Benjamin Franklin. There were many others, but it's clear that he was devoted to improving life. He was a successful businessman, inventor, scientist, and politician. Why do you think he was so successful? Because he tried new things, said a boy in the front row. True. I'm sure that had something to do with it. Anybody else? I asked. Because he had a wild imagination, said a girl with short hair and freckles. Yes, it would certainly take a big imagination to do some of the things he did. I noticed Freedom raised her hand, and I eagerly called on her. She said, it sounds like he was a hard worker, and he kept really busy. He wasn't afraid to try new things, and I bet he didn't spend all of his free time playing video games. I replied, true. Video games, movies, iPads, smartphones, or any of the electronic things that we spend time with today didn't exist when Benjamin Franklin was alive. Now think about how much time kids today spend playing video games or watching TV. Now, these aren't bad things to do, but if you used that same amount of time instead to think like Benjamin Franklin, what might you be able to do? What could you create or invent? Your ideas might very well change the world. What's up with Freedom knocking our video games? Cam whispered to Tommy. Tommy and Cam fist bumped. Then Cam raised his hand and asked, you know, that's cool how he invented all this stuff. But wasn't Benjamin Franklin one of the founding fathers of America? Didn't he spend a lot of time defending the rights of the colonies? You are absolutely right, Cam, I said. I had forgotten that Cam's favorite subject was history. In fact, right after Benjamin Franklin invented the lightning rod, you could say he was struck with an idea to unite the colonies. You mean he had a brainstorm, Tommy said, smiling and reaching out to Cam for another fist bump. A flash of lightning followed immediately by a loud crack of thunder overhead made everyone jump in their seats. I could hear the heavy rain on the roof of the school. I brought my attention back to the students and said, yes, Tommy, Franklin had a brainstorm. And like I said earlier, Franklin was a smart man. He was a genius. He was passionate about freedom and ready to defend America with his wit and wisdom. And it was the Stamp Act of 1765 that convinced him that it was time to tell England what he really thought. What's the Stamp Act? Asked a girl in the front row. I'm glad you asked, I said. Tomorrow, Liberty is going to introduce us to the Stamp Act with a special musical presentation, something you will not want to miss. You mean Liberty, your horse? Asked Cam. Yes. Liberty's a very talented horse. Now, I don't want to give anything away. Just be sure to come tomorrow, and you'll be in for a special treat. Just then, the school bell rang, and the students started gathering their backpacks and exiting the room. Freedom, however, came to the front of the classroom. She looked rather panicked and whispered, Mr. Revere, we have a situation. Oh, I asked, what seems to be the problem? It's Liberty, she said. Right after that loud thunderclap, I reached out to him with my mind. I sensed he was scared. Now, that lightning and thunder felt like it was right on top of us. Anyway, he's in the teacher's lounge waiting for us. That's quite the gift you have, Freedom, I said. Very convenient. I wasn't aware that your telepathic ability to speak to animals could reach beyond just a few yards. Well, usually it can't, she said. But I've grown a strong connection with Liberty, so it's easier. In fact, he's learning to speak to my mind as well. Well, thank you for telling me, I said sincerely. Freedom still looked extremely worried as she glanced over her shoulder, waiting for the final students to exit the classroom. Is there something else you needed to tell me? I asked, almost afraid to hear what she had to say. Freedom opened her mouth like she was about to say something but didn't know how to say it. Just spit it out, Freedom, I said, encouraging her. It's about Liberty, isn't it? She silently nodded. He's not alone in the teacher's lounge. He's with Benjamin Franklin. Excuse me, I asked, clearly not hearing her correctly. Liberty's not sure how it happened, Freedom exclaimed. One minute he was hiding in the teacher's lounge, hoping there wouldn't be any more lightning. He said that all he could think about was Benjamin Franklin and his invention of the lightning rod. He concentrated really hard and thought that if Ben Franklin were here, we'd all be safe. And that's when the lightning flashed right over the school. And the next second, boom! Benjamin Franklin appeared out of nowhere. I stood there, staring at Freedom like she was a ghost. "Mr. Revere," Freedom asked softly, "did you hear what I said?" I snapped out of my trance, and I took a deep breath. I exhaled and asked, "Liberty told you all of this?"
"Yeah, I mean, telepathically he did. And he's really scared that you're going to be mad at him."
"Tell him I'm not mad," I said.
Was I stunned?
Of course.
Worried?
Yes.
Feeling like the course of world history may have just been altered.
Absolutely.
"And tell him that we're coming to help."
I took out my phone and texted Tommy.
"Need your help. TTWL. Meet in teacher's lounge. ASAP.
Chapter 3. Freedom and I raced down the hallway to the teacher's lounge. I could still hear the rain coming down outside, but thankfully, the lightning and thunder had ceased. When we stopped in front of the door, Freedom said, "I better wait out here and keep guard."
"Good idea," I replied. I quickly slipped inside the teacher's lounge, and sure enough, Liberty was standing over a man dressed in colonial clothing who was awkwardly lying on a long orange couch.
"Are you sure you're not angry?" Liberty asked timidly.
"I assure you I'm not mad," I said, forcing a smile.
I walked closer to get a better look. The middle-aged man appeared to be unconscious, but his face looked surprisingly peaceful.
"Whoever that is a dead ringer for Benjamin Franklin," I said.
"You mean he's dead?" Liberty shouted, sounding panicked.
"Who's dead?" Tommy said as he walked into the room. "What the... who's that?"
The door opened again and Freedom peeked inside.
"You should try and keep it..."
"Wow! So it really is Benjamin Franklin."
She slipped in all the way and put her back to the door.
"Benjamin Franklin!" Tommy exclaimed. "You killed Benjamin Franklin?"
"He's dead?" Freedom panicked.
"Yes.
I mean, no. I mean, I don't know. It all happened so fast," Liberty whimpered.
"I'm going to prison for killing Franklin, aren't I?"
I kneeled down to feel the man's pulse.
"He's not dead.
But how did he get like this?"
"Like I told Freedom," Liberty tried to explain through gasps of anguish and despair. "The lightning flashed, and the thunder boomed, and then Mr. Franklin appeared out of nowhere. I think I wished him here."
"Sort of like how you can stop time when you concentrate hard enough," Freedom explained.
"The shock of traveling through time must have been too much for him, and he passed out," Tommy said. "I was close enough to push him onto the couch. He almost collapsed onto the floor. That must count for something, right?" Liberty said pleadingly.
For the first time, I looked closely at the face of the supposed Benjamin Franklin. He had wrinkles in his broad forehead and under his eyes. He had a large head, and the little hair he had was blonde but graying. His leather shoes, cream stockings, sea-green breeches and coat were clean, but somewhat plain. For the first time, the realization that I was kneeling above the legendary Benjamin Franklin hit me like a ton of bricks.
"What's in his hand?" Tommy asked.
In his left hand were several pieces of parchment with cursive writing on them. I quickly browsed the pages, and after reading several sentences, a sense of panic overcame me.
"Oh, my," I gasped.
"What's wrong?" Freedom asked.
"Well, this appears to be notes for a speech. If I'm correct, we may have just snatched away Benjamin Franklin before he could persuade the English government to repeal the Stamp Act."
"And that's a bad thing, right?"
Liberty worried.
"I don't know yet," I said. "What I do know is that we have to get him back to the past immediately.
Lucky for us, it doesn't appear that he's completely aware of what's happened. Now let's try to get Mr. Franklin onto Liberty's saddle. Liberty, move over here so it's easier for us to hoist him up."
As Liberty moved his large equine body, someone tried to enter the teacher's lounge. The door pushed open only a few inches,
and Freedom pushed back to close it. "Hey, open the door," Elizabeth yelled. "I saw Freedom go in there. I've been listening to your conversation. Let me in." Liberty backed up to the door and helped Freedom keep it shut. "What do we do?" Freedom whispered. "We stick with the plan," I softly said. "Tommy, Freedom, on the count of three, we lift Mr. Franklin onto the saddle. Liberty, keep that door shut." "That I can do," Liberty said firmly. "Hey, I said open the door. I can wait out here all day if I have to," Elizabeth threatened. "I know I heard Mr. Revere and his circus horse, and I'm pretty sure I heard Tommy's voice, too. And from the sound of it, some dead guy named Franklin. So I'm going to give you 30 seconds to open the door. After that, I'm bringing my dad, and you know how big he is. He'll have this door open in no time." As Elizabeth finished speaking, we adjusted Franklin's body onto the saddle, and I slipped on behind him. "I'll try and be back in a flash," I said.
"We can't let Elizabeth catch us in here," Tommy said.
She already has," Freedom whispered matter-of-factly.
"No, she hasn't," Tommy replied. "Technically, she only saw you come in."
"She said she heard our voices," Freedom said.
"Well, when she only finds you in here, she'll think again," Tommy said, smiling.
"So you're leaving me here?" Freedom whispered with wide eyes.
"It'll be worse if Elizabeth finds all of us together," Tommy pointed out. "If she just finds you, well, just tell her that you were sleepwalking and ended up in a teacher's lounge."
"Sleepwalking?" Freedom shook her head. "That is a lame excuse."
"Well, you'll think of something," Tommy said.
Freedom sighed. "Fine, just go. I'll figure it out."
"Do we have enough room to time jump in this small room?" Tommy asked.
I hesitated. Said, "Well, we've never tried it with this much space."
"But I can do it," Liberty interrupted. "I'll do anything to get us out of this mess."
I turned to Tommy and said, "You'll need to jump right behind us. We're headed to England, 1765.
Tommy raised his eyebrows and said with a smile, "Cool!
Let's go, Liberty," I said.
In his loudest whisper, Liberty said, "Rush! Rush! Rushing to history!"
And like before, the circular portal of swirling purple and gold instantly began to open. I held tightly to Liberty's saddle and Benjamin Franklin, and said, "London, England, 1765. Let's return Benjamin Franklin to the Palace of Westminster." With a hop, skip, and a jump, Liberty bolted up and threw our door to the past. As we landed, the jolt caused Benjamin Franklin to stir. Groggily, he began to come to.
"Quickly," I said, "help me get him to the ground."
With Tommy's help, we lowered him to a freshly cut lawn. Immediately, I noticed heavy fog that surrounded us. I couldn't see much, but I could hear the distant sound of horses. Yes, in fact, I could see a faint outline of two horses pulling a carriage. Large trees bordered a nearby dirt road that disappeared into a fog bank.
"Who are you?" Benjamin asked as he looked up at me from the grass.
Let me help you up, Mr. Franklin," I said with eagerness. I grabbed Ben's hand and I pulled him to his feet. He stood, brushed himself off, said, "I'm afraid I'm a bit disoriented. I was riding in a carriage and on my way to give a speech to Parliament, and then," and he paused, "let me think. Oh, yes, there was a brilliant white light, and for a second I remember staring at a horse." He turned his head, stared at Liberty, and he pointed that horse. I tried to divert his attention and loudly exclaimed,
"Benjamin Franklin! You are really Benjamin Franklin! It's a great honor, sir. You're a legend, an American hero. And we're standing here with you, right now, talking with you."
He was a very big deal back then, sort of like running into the president. Not exactly, but a big deal.
"I don't think we've met, sir," said Benjamin. "You seem to know my name, and though I'm flattered by your compliments, I'm afraid I've much more to accomplish in my life to ever be called any of the things you mentioned. So, tell me, what is your name, and who is this fine young man with you?"
I was giddy at the sight of one of the founding fathers of the United States of America. Now, he was shorter than I was, probably about 5'9 or 5'10", but he was larger than life, standing right in front of me. He put me at ease as he smiled and waited for my response. When I continued staring, Tommy grabbed my arm, shook it a little. "Mr. Revere, this is the part where you introduce yourself?" I snapped out of my momentary dream and then realized it wasn't a dream. Benjamin Franklin was actually speaking to me. I took a deep breath, and I said, "Yes, of course. I'm Rush Revere, history teacher and fellow American." "Ah, yes," said Benjamin. "I thought you might be from the 13 colonies, as your accent sounds a little non-British." "Oh, yes," I said, laughing, still feeling a little light-headed. "I'm from the United States of America." "Pardon me, the United what?" asked Benjamin. Tommy whispered, "Mr. Revere, the United States hasn't been invented yet, remember?" "What an interesting thought," Benjamin said. "I'll have to try and remember that." I composed myself and said, "It's truly a great honor to meet you. I apologize for sounding like a bumbling idiot." I turned to Tommy and said, "This is one of my students, Tommy." Liberty cleared his throat for attention and sidestepped close. "Oh, and of course, this is Liberty," I said with a little bit of apprehension. I was worried that Liberty's enthusiasm to meet any historical figure, especially one from his own century, might cause him to forget our secret that he was a talking horse. And just like I suspected, he forgot. "It's a great honor, Mr. Franklin. I'm just glad you're not dead," said Liberty with great enthusiasm. "Fascinating," said Benjamin, as he began to closely examine Liberty like he was an exhibit at the Museum of Natural History. "Absolutely fascinating." "Oh, yes," Liberty continued. "You can't begin to know the relief I felt when I found out you were still alive." "Whoa! I mean, seriously, seeing you standing here brings me a lot of joy. Yes, sir, joy with a capital J." Benjamin looked into Liberty's mouth, and then into his ears and nose. He finally said, "I'm thoroughly impressed. It appears you have the ability to reason and can fluently speak the English language." He turned to me, and he asked, "Is this an invention of your doing?" I gave the best explanation I could. I said, "Yes. Well, it was a crazy experiment with lightning," I replied nervously, "sort of an accident. Impossible to duplicate, but I've nurtured Liberty and helped him adjust to his new abilities and intellect." "Well, I must commend you for the scientific success that you've achieved," said Benjamin. "Truly, I feel very fortunate to have witnessed your accomplishment. But you would be wise to keep Liberty's gift a secret. I'm all for sharing the inventions I've discovered, but your discovery is a natural phenomenon. Yes, definitely a wonder to behold." Liberty blushed and said, "Ah, shucks. Thanks, Frank-a-Ben. I mean, Benja-Frank. Franklin Benjamin. Benjamin Franklin, sir." Liberty blushed again. Benjamin stroked Liberty's neck and said, "Yes, Liberty, you are definitely one of a kind. Indeed, most people would pass out in shock at the discovery of a talking horse." "Thank you for your counsel," I said. "And Liberty is usually very careful about letting others know about his gift, aren't you, Liberty?" "Oh, yes," said Liberty. "But I knew you would understand, Mr. Franklin. I had a good feeling about you." "Well, we're just glad we found you when we did, aren't we, Mr. Revere?" Tommy said. "Definitely. And I'm sure we've taken too much of your time. Certainly you're here in England for a special reason," I hinted. "I almost forgot," Benjamin said, as he quickly looked at his pocket watch. "What a relief," he sighed. "It appears that time is on my side today." Time is always on our side with Liberty, I thought. "As fellow colonists, you should join me," said Benjamin. "As a colonial representative of Pennsylvania, I've been invited to testify to Parliament about what is happening in the colonies, particularly about the opposition to the Stamp Act. I believe if we cut across this lawn, we can hail a carriage." As we followed Benjamin, I found myself smiling at the mere fact that we were about to experience an important moment in American history. It appeared that the fog was thinning, and in the distance loomed a massive building that looked like a castle fortress. "Mr. Franklin," Tommy asked, "are you in trouble? Why do you have to testify? Was there a crime? Now, what's Parliament? Sorry to ask you so many questions." Benjamin laughed and said, "Asking questions is the first step to discovery. Now, let me answer your questions in reverse. Parliament is the word we use in England for the English government. King George III regularly meets with Parliament, the House of Lords and the House of Commons, to make rules and laws to govern his people." Tommy asked, "Do the King and Parliament make the rules for the 13 colonies, too?" "Yes," said Benjamin, "and that's beginning to be a problem. In fact, many colonists think it's a crime for the King to tax the colonies. In particular, I have come to testify to members of Parliament why the colonies dislike the Stamp Act so much." "I remember Mr. Revere mentioned the Stamp Act in our history class," said Tommy. Liberty cleared his throat, said, "You'd know what the Stamp Act is if you'd seen and heard my Stomp Act," Liberty said. "I'd perform it for you now, but it's just not the same without the music." "You know, I am still not accustomed to a talking horse," Benjamin said with a chuckle. "Please excuse my laughter. It is simply an expression of surprise and admiration. Are you suggesting that you can also sing?" "Oh, boy. Let's not encourage him," I cringed. "I'm not prepared to sing my Stamp Act song just yet, but the national anthem's one of my favorites." And at once Liberty began singing, "Oh, say, does that star-spangled banner yet wave o'er the land of the free and the home of the brave?" Benjamin Franklin applauded and said, "I am amazed. And please be assured your secret's safe with me. However, I'm not familiar with this national anthem." I quickly replied, "Oh, yes, well, it hasn't caught on just yet." "Well, I think it has potential," Benjamin said. "I especially like the part about the land of the free, the home of the brave. In fact, it describes America perfectly. Our forefathers who first settled in America from England are some of the bravest people I have ever read about. Men like William Bradford, for example." "Our class learned all about William Bradford and Miles Standish, who sailed on the Mayflower and settled Plymouth Plantation," Tommy exclaimed. Benjamin nodded and said, "We owe everything to the brave colonists who first came to America to start a land of the free. And now it's my turn to be brave by fighting for the rights of the 13 colonies. We can talk more inside the carriage." Several carriages waited in a row like taxis, ready to take people to various destinations in London. Neatly trimmed hedges bordered either side of the road. The grass, the shrubs, the trees were perfectly landscaped. It was a sign that England was an established land with centuries of tradition and order. We waited for a carriage to pass before crossing the road. Benjamin called to the coachman of the lead carriage with two white horses and said, "Westminster Palace, the House of Commons, please." The footman opened the small door, and Benjamin paid him before we stepped up and inside the enclosed interior. Two purple velvet benches faced each other. Benjamin Franklin sat on one side. Tommy and I sat on the other. I saw Liberty roll his eyes. He was always bothered by the fact that he couldn't fit inside cars or buses and now carriages. As the carriage rumbled down the dirt road, I looked out the side window to see Liberty prancing alongside the horses pulling the carriage. From the looks of it, he had forgotten about riding inside the carriage and was now flirting like he was a stallion. Tommy announced, "Wow, this is really bumpy. I mean, this carriage could use a pair of shock absorbers." "I'm not familiar with shock absorbers, as you say," said Benjamin. "It's a device to help smooth out the ride so it's not so bumpy." "Are you an inventor, Tommy?" Benjamin asked. "I do like to build things. You have any advice for me?" Tommy asked. Never let uncertainty or fear stop you. If you work hard and think big, you can accomplish anything, especially in a free land like America. There are people that'll tell you otherwise. They will say you're not good enough, that you're not old enough, that you're not smart enough. That's balderdash. Do not listen to them. If you have a dream, follow it. Thanks, Tommy said. I'll remember that. By the way, you said you were fighting for the rights of the colonies. Exactly what rights are you fighting for? I'm fighting against this horrible idea called a Stamp Act. Horrible it is. Horrible. Last year, the British Prime Minister, George Grenville, passed the Stamp Act, the first direct tax on the American colonies. I know all about taxes, Tommy said matter-of-factly. Last year, I saved my money to buy this awesome Lego set, and... I'm sorry to interrupt, said Benjamin. What is a Lego set? I've been gone from the colonies for a couple of years. Is this some kind of new toy? Yeah, Tommy said reluctantly. They're sort of like building blocks, but they have pieces that connect together, and you can build all kinds of things. I have this Lego set with instructions to build a Death Star, you know, from Star Wars. And Tommy has quite the imagination, I said, cutting in, laughing as I nudged Tommy. Instructions to build a Star of Death for children? Interesting, mused Benjamin. Anyway, Tommy continued, I knew the exact price of this Lego set because I wrote it down, and I looked at it every week. I did lots of chores, and I worked hard, and I saved my money. And when I had earned enough, my mom took me to the store to purchase it. I put the exact change on the counter, but the salesperson said it wasn't enough. Well, I'm really good at numbers, so I knew I wasn't wrong. And that's when my mom told me that I'd forgotten about the tax. And I thought, the what? The sales tax, she said. And that's when I learned that we pay a little extra on everything we buy, and that little extra money, the sales tax, goes back to the government. And tell me, Tommy, how did this tax make you feel? Benjamin Franklin asked. Well, at first I didn't think it was fair, but then she said if we all pay a sales tax, then that money goes to help run the city. She said this way everyone can enjoy things like public schools, libraries, highways, police and fire protection. And once I realized all the places and services I get to enjoy because of all the taxes collected, I really didn't mind paying a little bit every time I buy something. You are a very smart boy, Tommy, said Benjamin. But what if the money from those taxes wasn't used to build up your city or bless its citizens? What if your tax money was being used for something you didn't agree with? What if there was no real benefit to anyone at all? Tommy thought for a second and said, well, wouldn't that be stealing? That doesn't seem fair. And that's why the colonists are angry, I said. Yes, said Benjamin. The Stamp Act is making the colonists pay extra money on something they didn't vote for. It is a tax that gives nothing back to the community. And we believe it's something that Parliament is doing to undercut our businesses and the success that we're having. But why do they call it the Stamp Act? I don't get that, asked Tommy. It's called the Stamp Act because a stamp is placed on all paper products reminding the colonists that England is still in charge, said Benjamin. You mean I have to pay a tax on anything I buy made from paper? Tommy asked again. Benjamin replied, anything and everything. Newspapers, almanacs, pamphlets, legal documents of all kinds, ship's papers, licenses, even playing cards. The act was to be enforced by stamp agents with severe penalties for any who would not pay. However, the colonists are putting a stop to it. Many resist paying stamp tax. I wouldn't be surprised if someday they rebel against the empire. Tommy laughed and said, that sounds a lot like Star Wars. Well, I'm not familiar with a Star War, said Benjamin. But if the 13 colonies continue to rebel and resist, it's just a matter of time before the Empire strikes back.
That's exactly what happens in Star Wars, Tommy shouted. And then the rebels are forced to retreat until the return of the Jedi.
I forced a nervous laugh and I said,
Jedi? That's Tommy's special word for hero, isn't it, Tommy?
Yeah, Tommy said, that's right. I just made it up. Jedi heroes like William Bradford and Miles Standish. All they wanted was freedom, and we can't let them down.
No worries, Tommy, I said. I saw colonists in Boston burning anything that had a tax stamp on it, and I've read about how the colonists are threatening the stamp agents. I even heard that one agent was tarred and feathered for trying to enforce the Stamp Act.
Tommy's eyes went wide and asked, when you say tarred and feathered, do you mean?
I'm afraid so, said Benjamin. It's a barbaric and cruel act to slop hot tar on someone's body and then pour goose feathers on top of them.
Oh, wow, Tommy said. This is really getting serious.
As the carriage slowed, Benjamin looked out the window and said, we have arrived at the Palace of Westminster, and it appears the fog has lifted. In 1765, England was said to be the most powerful country in the world, and as I peered out the window, I saw that the Palace of Westminster was certainly reflective of that power. The massive stone building, originally built in the Middle Ages, had several tall, castle-like structures that overlooked the River Thames. A beautiful courtyard, landscaped with well-trimmed shrubs and trees, welcomed us. The overall sight was breathtaking. The carriage stopped, and as the door opened, Benjamin said, follow me, gentlemen. I'm honored to have you as my guests. As we exited the carriage, I turned to Tommy and whispered, this building is where the British lords and lawmakers come to govern. In the United States, the Capitol building in Washington, D.C. is the equivalent. In the courtyard that surrounded the steps leading to two ornately carved doors were dozens of men. I assumed that these were the lords and lawmakers of England. They were dressed in the finest waistcoats, vests, and breeches. Most wore white wigs or their hair was pulled back and tied off with a ribbon. The sound of a large bell rung through the plaza, and the men responded by filing into the palace doors.
Now, let's see if I can get these British gents to repeal the Stamp Act, said Benjamin as we followed him into the palace.
We were the last ones to enter the building, so Liberty took a deep breath and slipped in behind us like he was wearing an invisibility cloak.
Chapter 4 Benjamin sat in a wooden chair behind a well-crafted wooden desk in the middle of a large room, and on the walls, masterful oil paintings of former British monarchs hung in grandiose golden frames. Exquisitely carved half columns stood against the walls and reached up to a high ceiling. 370 members of Parliament sat in theater seating on either side listening to Franklin's testimony about the colony's reaction to the Stamp Act. Now, without question, Benjamin Franklin looked exhausted after answering more than 170 questions. He took another sip of water and waited for another member of Parliament to ask yet another question. Secretively, I continued to record the proceedings with my smartphone.
"He's not being questioned, he's being interrogated," Tommy whispered from the back of the room. I feel really bad for him. He's got to be really tired.
Remember that he is fighting for freedom. Some people fight for it on the battlefield, some fight for it in a court of law, I said.
Well, it just goes to show how smart he is. These guys in Parliament keep trying to mess with his mind. It's like they keep asking the same questions to see if he'll give different answers, Tommy said.
Yep, some lawyers and politicians can be very crafty. I don't think they realize who they're dealing with, I said softly.
No kidding. I'd totally pick him to be on my debate team, said Tommy with a big grin.
What did I miss? Asked Liberty, who suddenly appeared behind a large curtain in the back of the stuffy room. Liberty was present for the first 30 minutes of questioning, but then disappeared to find a snack.
They just passed a law that gives donkeys special privileges over horses, Tommy whispered to Liberty.
What? shouted Liberty. The word reverberated off the walls and the ceiling. Thankfully, it was difficult to know where the sound was coming from. Order! Said the Prime Minister, who acted as the judge and pounded his gavel. We will have order during the questioning. Next question! Another member of Parliament raised his hand and asked, If the Stamp Act is not repealed, what do you think will be the consequences? How will the people of America respond? Benjamin sighed, but calmly replied, A total loss of respect and affection for Great Britain. Another question came from the other side of the room. Do you think the people of America would submit to pay the stamp tax if it were moderated? Again, Benjamin replied, No, never, unless compelled by force of arms. Still another question. Do they realize the British Empire owes a lot of money to those who helped us fight the French and Indian War, a war that was fought on American soil? Do you think it right that America should be protected by this country and pay no part of the expense? Without flinching, Benjamin replied, The colonies raised, clothed, and paid nearly 25,000 men and spent millions during the French and Indian War. Candidly, they believe they have paid their part in full. One final question for Mr. Franklin, called the Prime Minister. We have heard that the Americans claim no taxation without representation. Well, the fact is, Parliament has the right to tax the colonies, with or without their consent. Can anything less than a military force carry the Stamp Act into execution? Benjamin Franklin smiled the most convincing smile he could give and said with boldness, I do not see how a military force can be applied to that purpose. Murmurs spread across the great room and echoed off of the walls. Why may it not? Asked the Prime Minister. Suppose a military force is sent into America. They will find nobody in arms. What are they to do? They cannot force a man to take stamps who chooses to do without them. They will not find a rebellion. They may indeed make one. More murmuring rippled through the large hall, and Benjamin Franklin took a deep breath and exhaled. The Prime Minister stood from his seat, pounding his gavel, and the meeting was adjourned. Let's sneak out to the courtyard and let's wait for Mr. Franklin, I said. As we walked outside and down the stone walkway, I was reminded again how beautiful London was. The courtyard was circular and symmetrical, with a round pond in the middle. A variety of perfectly pruned shrubs and bushes lined a variety of pathways. We walked to the center of the courtyard, and Tommy said, No wonder the Revolutionary War happened. There's no way England and America are going to agree. They both think they're right, and both sides are getting angrier and angrier. This is not going to end well. You're right, I said. The Stamp Act may very well have been the spark that led to America's independence from England. The King and Parliament won't back down. The 13 colonies are standing firm for freedom, and tempers will eventually reach a boiling point. Speaking of boiling point, Liberty said, I think most people overcook their food. There's nothing worse than overcooked potatoes or carrots or especially asparagus. I mean, seriously, limp and soggy asparagus is almost as bad as a limp and soggy handshake. Confused, I questioned, a soggy handshake? Liberty clarified, You don't want one, trust me. It begins by soaking in the bathtub or playing in a pool for too long, and then your hands look old and wrinkly. Shaking a soggy hand, it feels like you're holding a slimy, shriveled piece of seaweed, and you're not going to impress anyone with seaweed. Why are we even talking about this? I said defensively, because when I said boiling point, you started talking about, Liberty interrupted, what we should be talking about is how to help the colonists defend their freedoms. I rolled my eyes and I said, I agree. Tommy, you have any questions about what you've heard in there? Yeah, I do, Tommy said. I'm not sure I understand what no taxation without representation means. It's the main reason why the colonists are mad, I said. It's important to understand that the 13 colonies are still a part of England. They still consider King George to be their king, and they're subject to the rules and laws of the British Empire. So, of course, if they have to live by these laws, then they want to help make the laws. Instead, the king and parliament are making decisions without them. You mean like the Stamp Act, said Tommy. Exactly. The colonies petitioned parliament to repeal the Stamp Act several times, but they were ignored each time. Finally, the colonies said no more. No taxation without representation. Tommy nodded and said, it sort of reminds me of this kid named Billy who lived in our neighborhood and had this really cool fort. But he only let the kids on his street play in the fort. And I heard it was really cool. Had a pinball machine and this awesome rope swing. Plus it had jars full of candy and snacks. Anyway, the kids on my street decided that we should make our own cool fort. But Billy didn't like that idea. He had a top-secret meeting with the kids on his street, and they decided that we would use Billy's fort if we paid to get in. We told him, no way, Jose. I thought you said his name was Billy, said Liberty. It is, I said. Jose, just a nickname that rhymes with way. Oh, Liberty replied. You mean like, go take a hike, Mike, or take a chill pill, Phil, or go ride a ferret, Garrett. Exactly, Tommy said, laughing. Anyway, we told Billy that we were going to have our own meeting, and we decided we didn't need his lousy fort, and we built our own. Well, you did just what the colonies did, I said. They had their own meeting in October of 1765. The colonies formed the Stamp Act Congress to figure out what to do and say to England about the Stamp Act. Well, I know what I would do, said Liberty. I'd get a big piece of tape, and I'd make a line down the center, and say this side of the barn is mine, and that side of the barn is yours, and if you step on my side of the line, then I'm telling Mom. Seriously, I had this brother that was so bossy, and he thought he owned every inch of our barn, and he was... I stroked Liberty's neck. I said, it's all right, Liberty. That was in the past. But you bring up a really good point. King George felt like he was the boss of the colonists, and he felt like he owned their land, and he didn't want to give it up. That's why he started taxing the people and tried forcing them to buy British products. He was trying to control what they did. He wanted them to think of the British Empire first. Well, that's hard to do when you live 3,000 miles away, said Tommy. The king believed that there was lots of money to be made in the colonies, I said. America was rich in resources like wood, minerals, furs, and especially land. Plus, he sent a lot of British citizens to colonize the New World. Then you can understand why he was selfish and wanted to maintain his power and make the people feel dependent on England. But the colonists, they're becoming so successful. They really don't need the king or the British Empire, right? Tommy asked. Correct, I said. America is like a child who's big enough to ride a bike without training wheels. But the king doesn't want to.